everyone. Welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. I've got Tony with me today. Tony, we have some exciting news, and today's election day here in the United States. X is crazy. The media outlets are chirping. The eyes of the world are upon the U.S. Before we jump into the rest of the news, I would just love to hear your thoughts and comments on the U.S. election.
It's a big day indeed, man. All eyes are watching. This is the moment of truth, the moment many people have been waiting for. As you know, at the Bitcoin Way, we're not a political team here. You know, we don't take sides with anyone, but it is important for everyone to vote, not to vote for one side over another, but to vote for, you know, the redemption of your time and energy. Just understand, like, whoever wins, you know, at the polls today is unlikely to end the money printer. So the real vote that you should be casting is one that brings you closer to the values that you align yourself with, the values of truth, the values that we align ourselves with, which is why we push for Bitcoin and Bitcoin in self-custody wholeheartedly. Because, you know, as long as the money printer is in control of the money supply, well, you know, the world problems will not cease to end. Some parties may lessen the pain, but until, you know, that mold is completely shattered and the separation of money and state is cemented, things will not likely to get much, much better. Regardless, you know, this is a transition. It's not an on and off switch, unfortunately. So it is important for everyone to cast their vote. Please vote for yourself, essentially. You know, regain your values, your dignity. Vote for the right party that, you know, will likely push you more in that direction. That's what I have to say.
I think there's a knee-jerk reaction amongst many Bitcoiners. You know, many of us lean toward, you know, libertarianism and just as much freedom, individual freedom as possible, which I think is a great position to take. But that's not to say that in light of our current political system, that there aren't wins that we could have with, you know, quote unquote, the right person in charge. I mean, there are topics that extend beyond the money printer. Certainly, like today for myself, I voted this morning, and there are local issues that, you know, have a more immediate impact. And so I think the, you know, your vote doesn't matter sort of crowd, I think, misses the point that it's a small gesture that we can make, both to honor the people who legitimately and bravely put their lives on the line, you know, 250 plus years ago. But also to maybe make some progress in meaningful ways at a more local level. So get out there and vote. To everyone listening, it is an important election. There's a lot on the line, and there's potentially a lot of progress that can be made in certain areas. But I wholeheartedly agree, the money printer is likely going nowhere. All righty, let's jump into some of the news, Tony. So we've got, let's see. Breaking, Cartwright, a multi-billion-dollar UK pension fund, just announced a 3% Bitcoin allocation. And so you remember the Wisconsin pension fund allocated a few months ago. We talked about that as a percentage. This is 30 times higher and the largest allocation of any sovereign fund in the world so far. Tony, the big money seems to be here, and it seems to be trickling in. But I'm curious how you foresee this playing out. What are the implications of these sorts of announcements as they continue to be made?
It's it was expected. It was just a question of time when it'll start to trickle in. I mean, they say 3%, but that 3% represents like a really big number, right? So, I mean, where else are they going to go? I mean, even eventually everyone understands that if they do nothing, their wealth, their money is headed to zero, along, you know, with, you know, the fiat currency that it's denominated in. It's just a mathematical equation. It's common sense at some point. And so where else do you want them to put their money? So if they're going to start at 3%, probably because they don't know much about it other than, you know, they have to do something, right? So it starts with 3%. They become more educated. They learn more, you know, and then slowly but surely that 3% grows to 5%, then 10%. And before you know it, you know, like it's the majority of their holdings. And then you have the copy paste domino effect across the industry. People, you know, look at what others are doing. And especially if they're successful at it, they're like, oh yeah, me too. We want to do this. And so before you know it, you know, the slowly then suddenly, that's exactly what's going to happen. And so it's not surprising to me. I was just waiting when it was going to happen. I was expecting it to happen much sooner, but you know, unfortunately, the world works at a much slower pace than I'd like sometimes. But as long as we get there, I mean, it's a win, and we're definitely headed there. It's very clear. You'll see more of these stories, you know, crop up on a weekly basis at some point, maybe even daily. And again, all roads lead to Bitcoin. Do it now, do it later. Everybody gets Bitcoin at the price they deserve.
Yeah. The sad thing is I can just envision this this future scenario a couple of years from now where the 3% allocation is turned into 15% because Bitcoin does what it does. And then some financial guru is going to have to right size their portfolio to get it back down to 3%. And it's like, you know, they clearly don't understand it. What I will say about this particular case is my understanding, I could be wrong, I saw this in a couple of places though, is that they didn't buy they're not allocated to the ETFs. They're working with a third party custodial service to custody Bitcoin. And if that's the case, that is a huge step in the right direction. Not that, you know, you want to trust custodians, but you know, some of these institutions, pension funds probably don't have the option of just keeping a, you know, a cold card in someone's basement. But that to me could be an interesting development that people begin to these funds and you know, investment firms begin to recognize that real Bitcoin is an option, you know, just like people used to keep real gold. Like you can keep real Bitcoin, and it's a hell of a lot easier to do so than keeping physical gold on hand, you know. So again, we'll see, but I think you're right, and I'm hopeful for the people who benefit from the pension funds, for these beneficiaries, that they hold on to it and they don't keep right sizing their portfolio back down to 3% when they see a, you know, a huge win in Bitcoin, and that they allow it to just rip and consume more and more of their portfolio. But again, not optimistic. Alrighty, some more bad news. 35% of millennials, so my generation, Tony, have $0 saved for retirement. 20% say they will never retire. And he says Social Security is not going to save you. You must figure a way out to save yourself. Man, that's an alarming statistic. I can't imagine at my age having nothing saved for retirement. And the you know, assumption here is that if they have $0, most of them, it's not because they're all in on Bitcoin, right? Like they just don't have anything saved for retirement. Yeah. What do you think this means for the world, you know, 30 years from now when these people reach otherwise sort of normal retirement age?
Well, that's if they reach normal retirement age, you know, at this pace, this is a very alarming number, especially, you know, when you have a young generation that has going literally nowhere. You have a problem to deal with because, you know, you can expect anything. You know, when someone has nothing to do or nothing to lose, you know, you have a whole set of like a whole set of problems that emanates from this. But I mean, how do you blame them? I mean, the educational system is complete rubbish. So they're not taught anything useful, right? The money that they're working for is also worthless, and they're not getting a lot of it to begin with to top it off. So how do you expect them to put one and one together and, you know, have a proper brain framework in order to understand what they have to do? I mean, they're swimming against the tide in a system that's designed to steal from them, right? And they're not taught anything else beyond that this is how it's supposed to be. So it's like a lose-lose from day one. And so it takes considerable effort, one, to, you know, to understand that this is what's going on, and to forcibly opt yourself out and, you know, do the work to find something more useful to in order to like structure your life in a way that makes sense and, more importantly, that's sustainable. I mean, if at the age of 30 you're broke, what are the chances you make it to 60 if nothing changes for you? Either you're going to end up in jail, or you're going to end up dead, statistically. Because what are you going to do? You're going to do something stupid at some point, right? Out of desperation. And so this is usually what happens. Unfortunately, it's not because they're stupid people. It's because, you know, there's no guidance. You know, you're left to your own devices. And if you happen to fall into the wrong crowd, well, you know, that story doesn't usually end well. So Very sad statistic, man. I mean, I really hope things change, but you know, people need to be willing to help themselves as well. It's not just like there's no light switch, you know, that miraculously fixes all these problems. It's on each and every one of us to also do our parts.
Right. Yeah. I've told my wife this before that I completely empathize with, I think, the millennial generation. They've been screwed in a way that the baby boomers haven't. And most of them don't understand that or the mechanics of how that's happened. Certainly the baby boomers is a general population. Many of them at least don't understand, the lucky cards that they were, the lucky hand they were dealt. But I told my wife, I've told her this before, like if things got really bad for us financially, like there's nothing that I wouldn't do to fix that situation. You know, like if that means waiting tables, if it means, you know, working in law enforcement, if it means like, I mean, you name it, like I'll figure it out. And I think a lot of people have this mindset that like, well, I got a degree in, you know, 18th century, you know, art, and so I need to work in that. And it's like, no, like there's not a job for that. Sorry. Like go find it. Like the fact that you got that degree doesn't change the fact that no one cares and you need to go do what you need to do. And I think there's like that used to be sort of an obvious path for people. It's like when things get desperate, you go solve it and you go do what you need to do. And unfortunately, I think people have been too comfortable. And I think many millennials too, they have boomer parents who are able to support them and, you know, willing to support them and provide through that. And I think that's awesome to an extent, you know, like having, you know, being able to give to your children and help. But I think it's conditioned them to not need to take the obvious and practical steps to provide for themselves in many cases. So, that's kind of my takeaway. I don't know if you have any other comment on that.
Yeah, the thing is, you know, doing it, whatever it takes to fix it, that's going to become considerably harder now because, you know, the low-hanging fruit fixes are going to disappear, in my opinion. Remember, we live in the tech world, right? And now we have AI in full force. So all of these low-hanging fruit jobs that people usually resort to when, you know, things are really bad, well, those may not be around anymore. So what are you going to do in a scenario like this? You're going to have to forcibly upgrade your skill set to something brand new, maybe that you've never seen before, just to compete, like just to remain relevant. Because if waiting tables, for example, or flipping burgers or things of that sort gets replaced by machines, right? Who's going to hire you if that's what you're resorting to as, you know, the quick fixes? That's what I mean. Like these things are likely to vanish one day. And so In a good sense, it forces humanity to, you know, to do more. But again, it's not a light switch. Like a lot of people will genuinely have a hard time with this. And how they react to this new reality is unknown. And that can be scary, right? Because, you know, when people are desperate, what do? They do instinctively what comes to mind. I've seen that in one scenario 4-5 years ago. It's not a pretty picture. So again, this is all speculation, but it's just to say that the human race is unpredictable. Like if I put you in a desperate situation, you don't even know how you're going to react until you're actually in those shoes. So this is why, for me, it's a bit worrisome to see these numbers and to see people, you know, genuinely have no idea what their purpose in life is. And so hopefully we move in the right direction, but you know, that's time will tell. It's to be seen.
Absolutely. All righty. And it wouldn't be election day if we didn't make fun of our beloved overlords in our final segment. So the U.S. government 9 years ago, and this was a couple days ago, but effectively 9 years ago to the day, U.S. government sold 44,000 Bitcoin for $400 each. Rizzo says a $3 billion mistake. They obviously didn't read the Bitcoin standard before making that transaction. Tony, do you think the U.S. government will ever recover 44,000 Bitcoin?
Man, I don't think they even cared back then. Don't they print that amount in like, I don't know, half a day these days? You know, so why would they bother learning about Bitcoin or any of that stuff? They just press a button, you know, let the printers rip and there you go. Problem solved. You know, let the rest of the world can go to hell, but that's okay. You know, like the money's there now. So I don't think these clowns were thinking about anything beyond, you know, whatever, you know, decision they were making back then. The money, calculating the money and making sure it remains valuable, you know, and balanced and all that, that's the least of their concerns. So them selling it, you know, of course, it's in hindsight, it's the dumbest decision you can ever make because they're not going to get it back, at least not as easily. Well, again, I could be wrong. Again, they could, you know, explode that money printer again and just buy it back at a much higher price. But, you know, whether they cared in the moment, I highly, highly doubt that. It was like, whatever. So for them, it was sell this trash. It's worth nothing. Life goes on.
Yeah. And as funny as it is, and as big a mistake as it will, you know, be apparent, you know, 20 years from now, 10 years from now, whenever, you know, $3 billion. I think there was a day last week where we added over $100 billion in new debt. So it's like, you know, yeah, that $3 billion is going to be a lot more than $3 billion someday. But in the meantime, they're not sitting there kicking themselves because who cares? We can always print more money. We can always take on more debt, and that's what they've been doing. Yeah, it's just a button. It's just a spreadsheet most of the time. You don't even need to press a button, you know. So, yeah, just keep in mind, everyone, go vote because there are issues that matter. But I think the money printing continues. Tony, I think that's probably a good place to wrap it up. For everyone listening, thank you so much for tuning in. Go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Check us out. We'd love to schedule a free 30-minute consult with you. We can talk you through proper 100% Bitcoin self-custody with zero counterparty risk, privacy phones, online privacy, Plan B residency options. We are on a mission to bring self-sovereignty to the masses and would love to help you and chat with you. Again, that's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Tony, as always, it's been a pleasure. Look forward to catching up with you again later this week.
Absolutely, Michael. Thank you.
Cheers.